One of China's most acquisitive companies gets seized by China. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The Chinese government said today it has seized control of Anbang, the firm that owns New York's Waldorf Astoria Hotel and other high-profile U.S. properties. China has also charged the company's former chairman with economic crimes. Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak joins us here from Shanghai. Morning, Jennifer.
Hi, David.
I'm looking for some context here. Remind us about this company and why it's getting so much attention these days.
Well, Anbang started out as a car insurance firm with state backers, and it quickly became one of the richest conglomerate, but also one of the most opaque. And it made a big splash on the global stage a few years ago with some very high-profile acquisitions, including the Waldorf Astoria, but also the Westin St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco, the Intercontinental in Chicago. Last year, it was reportedly in talks with a company owned by President Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, about a stake in 666 Fifth Avenue. Now, those talks ended after the media reported on potential conflicts of interest. But Anbang isn't the only one on a big buying spree abroad. And some people are questioning who controls these companies and what are their ties to the Chinese government. Anbang's former chairman, Wu Xiaohui, who is now charged with economic crimes, he's married to the granddaughter of the late Paramount leader, Deng Xiaoping.
All right. But today, alleged wrongdoing. But if you widen out, go macro, are there other reasons China would want to crack down on this high flyer?
Here's the thing. Anbang has been very aggressive about acquiring these big properties. They've been spending billions of dollars, and they're not the only firms in China doing that. And Chinese authorities are very worried about excessive borrowing. And President Xi Jinping has made it a priority to control financial risk. So this move may be one of the biggest efforts yet to rein in these Chinese companies.
All right. Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak in Shanghai today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Keeping an eye on markets here, the headline stock market indicators in Japan and China rose today, up 1% in Hong Kong. The 100-share index in London is down 0.2% now. The S&P future here is up 0.2%. Dow future up 0.4%. A benchmark for interest rates in America is just below 2.9% on the 10-year yield. The U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments Monday in a case that represents the biggest challenge to organized labor in years. It's Janus versus American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Can public sector workers who decline to join a union but get benefits of that union be forced to pay a fee? Public sector jobs have helped many workers move into the middle class. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer looks at how this case could change that economic equation.
Welcome to Pimlico Elementary Middle School.
Wendy Smith is the school nurse at Pimlico Elementary in Baltimore.
This time of the year is definitely busy, cold and flu season.
Smith is also president of Local 558 of AFSCME. She can understand why someone who's not in the union would balk at being forced to pay the fee, which averages around $400 a year.
I definitely get it. You know, I'm a single parent.
Smith's argument to those non-members, the union uses those fees for negotiating contracts, benefits, higher wages, and filing grievances.
Look at the value that you're receiving for this $400 that you have received, you know, your wage increases.
Smith says public sector unions have been a way into the middle class for many African-American families like hers. Janelle Jones with the Economic Policy Institute looked at median hourly wages for African-Americans in government jobs.
So black women make $17.92 in the public sector and $13.08 in the private sector.
Jones says black men in government jobs also make more. If the Supreme Court rules against AFSCME and the union can't collect the non-member fee, it could undermine public sector unions in 22 states, which would still have to represent everyone, whether they paid or not.
And so a weaker union is going to be less able to protect its workers. And the people who basically need the most protection are those who are usually discriminated against.
Often people of color. Brad Hirschbein is an economist at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. He says about a quarter of all state and local government workers are people of color. And if AFSCME loses and public sector unions have less bargaining power to negotiate wage increases,
you could begin to see increases in inequality and perhaps even increases in poverty among that sector of the population.
Of course, the unemployment rate is low right now. Some employers are having a hard time finding employees, so that gives many workers, union and non-union, some leverage. But Hirschbein says that won't last forever. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Now an update on the upgraded identification we need to get onto airplanes. About half the states in the country offer cards that comply with the Real ID Act of 2005. Other states have been given extensions. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports on the status of Real ID and choices travelers may have to make.
Starting in the spring of 2019, Pennsylvania residents can get the new compliant IDs. But Alexis Campbell with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation says people will actually have to seek them out.
It's not like when we become Real ID compliant, your existing driver's license is going to transform into a Real ID.
As IDs get updated, travelers will have some decisions. In Pennsylvania, for example, residents can buy a Real ID driver's license for around $30 or stick with an old-fashioned one. The 24 states not yet in compliance have until October 2020 to meet the new standards. If they don't, those residents must show other identification to board a plane.
To me, all of this Real ID stuff is really a great excuse to get or renew a passport.
Christine Sarkis is with SmartTravel.com. Sarkis says Real ID is fueling demand for passports, which travelers can use instead of a Real ID, and is one reason why almost 3 million more people applied for passports this year than last. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Legendary investor Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway conglomerate has a huge pile of cash, $100 billion worth. We say cash, but it's not in suitcases like in gangster movies. Berkshire's cash is in U.S. government treasury bills, according to the Wall Street Journal, making the company one of the largest single holders of U.S. government debt. Now, this weekend, Berkshire publishes Buffett's annual letter to investors, which will be scoured for clues as to what Buffett and team want to do with some of that money beyond staring at it hungrily on the balance sheet. Our executive producer is Nicole Childers, our digital producer Janet Wynn, intern Aidan Connolly, the engineer Brian Allison. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.